This is a recording of the State Water Plan hearing on Policy 32 in Twin Falls, Idaho at 2 p.m. on January 31st.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, anytime.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gene Gray. I'm chairman of the Idaho Water Resource Board. And with me today, I have Dave Rydelch. Dave is a farmer from the St. Anthony area and also a member of the Committee of Nine. Jim Chauver from the Eden area. Jim farms over there. Don Kramer from the Castle Ford area. From the Department of Water Resources, we have Wayne Hawes and a geologist with the department, Frank Sherman. Got it right, didn't it, Frank? What we're here to speak to you about today is Policy 32, or a revision thereof, of the State Water Plan. And if you have a copy of your current, the front page will kind of give you a general rundown on exactly the position of the Water Resource Board. December of 1984, we accepted some draft language for a revision of Policy 32 of the existing State Water Plan. And that's what we are here for today, is to take your testimony on the revisions of that policy. If you look on page 2 and page 3 of your copy of the currents, you will find the draft language of Policy 32. Mr. Sherman will be going over that briefly for you to give you kind of an overview of exactly how the thing lays out. Pages 4 through pages 7 is the legislative package you've all been hearing about and reading about that our legislature is presently working on. Policy 32 is an integral part of that legislative package. It's very important to the board that we get your public input so we know how you feel about the draft language. We want you to constructively take it apart for us. We want your criticism. We want your recommendations. The board will be accepting written testimony at the Boise office until February 22nd. And you might write that down. If you're not going to testify this afternoon, that would prefer to send us written testimony. We would certainly be honored and glad to receive that from you. If you'll take a look on page 7 on the right-hand side, you'll see some actions that must be taken by May 15 to implement the entire package. The first one on the list shows amendment to the State Water Plan, and that's why we're here today, to get the information so the board can then go back and put this information together. Secondly, the legislative package must be passed, and it must be passed pretty much the way it is right now, where all three parties that negotiated this particular package may not go for it. Thirdly, the appropriate action by the Public Utility Commission or the legislature, as called for from pages 4 through pages 7, must be accepted. There must be an order from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission agreeing to the package that the parties are going to accept. Fifth, the Idaho PUC must dismiss the 1977 lawsuit by the ratepayers. And sixth, if required, because we have, Idaho Power has some dams in the Hells Canyon which border our neighboring state of Oregon, the Oregon PUC may also have to okay the package if necessary. And seven, the enactment by the legislature of subordination language is set forth in 7A and 7B, and you'll find that on pages 6 and 7, and it is, again, part of the package. But what we'd like to do right now is we'll have Mr. Sherman give you an overview of Policy 32. We will follow that by the public testimony. We have some people who will give formal testimony to us this afternoon. We will close the formal testimony and then we'll open it for questions and answers. So anything you might have, we've got staff with us to help answer those questions. Mr. Sherman?
It gets a little complicated to know what's really happening here. Three things people really have to be aware of. There's the water plan that's in place. There's the proposed revisions to one of the policies in the plan, copies of which you have in your hands. And then there's the agreement itself. And most of the changes in the water plan, proposed changes, are really reflections of the agreement. The agreement that the state and Idaho Power entered to specify certain changes that the negotiators felt had to be made in the state water plan. You take a look at the very first one, It talks about Policy 32, the Snake River Basin. In the existing water plan, the whole idea of the policy that governed the Snake River Basin was that the Water Board was allocating the unappropriated waters within the basin. That got to be awkward when the Supreme Court ruled in 1982 that the Idaho Power Company had an unsubordinated right at Swan Falls. They had some legitimate claim to certain amounts of water there. That was sent back to district court, and that's when the state and Idaho Power decided went up to the courts and let's find a deal. The numbers in the existing plan were based on the concept that all of Idaho Power's water rights at that facility was subordinated, and the state had the authority to allocate all that water to other uses. So the numbers in here have to be high. So it was a concern of the board already that it needed to be changed. With the agreement specifically saying they wanted changes made to it. The board then looked at revised language and is out to hear your comments on it. The one thing that's slightly different about this version than that which is already in the water plan is that we've tried to highlight all the different things that seem to be policy. And we just have some accompanying text to try and explain the whys or wherefores of the policy. The very key one, key to the whole agreement, key to this policy of how the Snake River Basin should be managed, is the concept that the minimum stream flow at the Murphy Gauge will be raised. The existing water plan says 3,300 CFS year-round. We're going to raise it to 3,900 CFS in the summertime and 5,600 in the wintertime. It's not at least unusual to have different flows or different periods for a water right. That's not a new idea. In trying to negotiate a compromise between two competing interests, there's just flat more water going past that gauge in the wintertime, therefore the negotiators set it higher in the winter than in the summer. The proposed revision repeats minimum flows that are already in the water plan. Or discharge at Milner Dam, that can be zero in periods of overflow. It also repeats a flow at Weezer of 4750 CFS. Those are unchanged. They've gone through the whole hearing process already. The board is adding or proposes to add under this particular policy. Minimum average daily flow at Johnson's Bar and Lime Point. These are two flows that are part of the federal license that Idaho Power has for the House Canyon Complex. There are points downstream of those dams. They're there to assure, protect fisheries and wildlife and navigation on the river. The existing plan recognized the importance of those flows by citing them and actually quoting the language. The thought is by adding them to the water plan and making it state policy that they shall be minimum flows at those points. No matter what the federal government and Idaho Power might do in regards to the license at those places, these flows then should be protected by the state as part of the state water plan. Policy 32A, water held in trust by the state. The policy doesn't say very much, and it's cryptic as to what it does say because part of the agreement was the so-called legislative package, and these sections of Idaho Code that are referred to in Policy 32A 42-203 BCA don't actually exist. They're before the legislature right now. The key one is 42-203C, and that's the one that's been referred to as the public interest. Well, let's back up a point before we really talk about the public interest criteria. The whole deal, as it's called, the compromise of the agreement, revolves around the Swan Falls Dam and the gauge right below it, because that's where the suits were brought in court, specific for the water right at that point. The negotiators, looking at it rather realistically and saying, we want out of court, we want to reach our own settlement. The first point that was really important was, what's the historic low flow? How low has it got? How far below Idaho Power's claim right at 8400 CFS? The historic low flow at that gauge is 4500 CFS. quite a bit below what Idaho Power claims, yet still well above the 3,300 that the existing water plan specifies. So I'm trying to compromise. They sort of just flip that in half. Existing plan calls for 3,300. 4,500 is as low as it's gotten. You cut it in half and you come out with 600 on each side of the dividing point. So they chose 3,900 for the summertime flow. Now everybody thinks about that, meaning there's 600 more CFS that's got to go past that gauge, 600 more CFS that's available for allocation. And that's true. The thing one has to remember is that Idaho Power has a different claimed right at every one of its upstream facilities from Swan Falls. They use the Swan Falls case because it's the critical one in the river. It's the one where the flows have gotten down close to what the water plan called for. It's the one the court case is revolved around. But in actual fact now, at any gauge in the river, Idaho Power's water right is being held in trust by the state. Idaho Power has agreed that as long as 3,900 CFS go past the Murphy gauge in the summertime, 5,600 in the wintertime, that they will not take action on any of their upstream facilities if they're not getting the water that the water right we're claiming entitled to. That's the importance of the Murphy gauge. It doesn't matter how much water goes past Bliss or whatever, as long as 3,900 is going past the Murphy gauge anymore. What happens to this water that's held in trust by the state? It represents water that Idaho Power claimed. The Idaho Supreme Court recognizes that there's some validity to that claim. They have said you can take part of it and reallocate it to water, to other uses. Because that water is not the unappropriated waters of the state, it's already been claimed by someone else, the state can put additional criteria for use on that water. Policy 32A says, in order to be reallocated, can only be done in accordance with the criteria established by Idaho Code 42-203A. Well, that's the existing requirements that the Department of Water Resources has to check off before they can give you a water right. Is it a beneficial use? Is it a speculative venture? Can you prove your beneficial use? Those kinds of things. They're already in place. But 42-203C is the idea that because it is appropriated water, we're going to give it to somebody else for a different use, we're going to put some additional criteria on it. These are the ones that talk about what's its impact on the overall economics of the state, what's its impact on our power generation capacity, is it in the family farm tradition, designed to be a simple checkoff list. When someone applies for some of this water, the department tallies up the pluses and minuses there and has to make a decision whether that water can be allocated or not. Remember, we're talking about water that's already been appropriated. It's not the unappropriated water of the states that can be taken by any citizen. Policy 32B, domestic, commercial, municipal, and industrial. The existing water plan sets aside, and in the old days we used acre feet and the negotiators chose to go to CFS, so it gets a little confusing, but the old plan allocated water for municipal industrial uses. Convert the acre feet in here to some kind of average CFS, it comes out to about 144 CFS per day, average flow, shall be diverted or allocated for expansion of municipal industrial uses. The policy is written out to 150 CFS. One of the reasons for making it a little larger is that we're including domestic users. It turns out that's not a very important reason, because in terms of trying to manage the river, we're now particularly concerned about consumptive use. The amount of the diversion has to be recorded. It's not the key any longer. It's how much of that water you divert is actually consumed, how much gets out of the basin. The real reason for raising it a little bit is because the old plan discusses the possibility of thermal power plants within the state, and they allocated a lot of water for that purpose. We don't see the likelihood of new thermal power plants in the state in the near future, but if they were to come in, we would try and accounting for this appropriated water that we're reallocating, we would consider thermal plants to be an industrial use and charge that against the 150 CFS set aside. One of the concerns about the 150 CFS is really just a guess. Why we feel comfortable with it is, one, it's close to what the existing water plan called for, and two, the water plan gets revised every 5 years, or at least readopted. So if staff people have made a bad guess on how much water should be set aside for expanded uses in the domestic commercial municipal industrial areas, it can be changed. Policy 32C, agriculture. Pretty straightforward. It's a policy of Idaho that appropriated water held in trust by the state, less the amount of water necessary for DCMI, shall be available for reallocation to agricultural uses. Once again, because it's water that's already been appropriated, it has to meet whatever criteria the legislature ends up establishing before the director can turn it loose. The thing that's slightly different here is in the existing water plan, when the board thought they had a lot of water to allocate, they put down desirable acres of new development by the year 2020, for example. We've taken a long, hard look at the number of acres of new development that have come in recently. We find that over the past 8 or 10 years, the average number of new acres per year is something like 17,000. We have therefore chosen to say, well, if that's the number that's been happening, let's use that as a sort of a target number or cap number. Certainly, under current conditions, we don't expect large acreages to come in as new ground. But rather than just trying to limit it to 20,000 or 17,000 per year, we said, let's put a cap of 80,000 acres in any four-year period. That way, a big project can go in, not be stop because of some artificial barrier or the state doesn't like to see more than 20,000 new acres every year because of the problems of trying to reallocate the water. Policy 32D, hydropower. It says the policy of Idaho shall be that hydro generation be recognized as a beneficial use. That's already in the law. Certainly electrical generation is recognized as beneficial use of water. It further goes on to say that depletion of flows below the minimum average daily flows set forth in policy 32 is not in the public interest. So a lot of people who argue that the ratepayers being hurt because we're taking away water that belonged to Idaho Power, or Idaho Power in fact is giving up water that belongs to them. That is probably a legitimate point of view that the negotiators and the board have to look at. The thing that Idaho Power gets by this agreement, in this particular statement, is that the 3,900 and the 5,600 is now state policy, and the water level should never go below that. When the subordination bills were introduced in the legislature, the intent certainly was to take away all of Idaho Power's water and try and get it down to 3,300 on a year-round basis. Well, we couldn't. That did not benefit. The compromise is okay. We won't go quite that low, and we'll guarantee you state policy, these shall be the minimum flows. Policy 32E, navigation, it just basically says that the minimum flows that are set by the water plan provide enough water for commercial and recreational uses of the river. The only commercial boating on the river of any significance takes place below the Hell's Canyon complex in the Hell's Canyon area itself. 3,900 in the summertime probably will provide adequate water in the river for recreational uses. Certainly it's more than the existing plan provides for, so the board GSA are on safe ground with that. Policy 32G, fish, wildlife, and recreation. The policy is sort of the same language that's in the existing plan, except it of course is referring to higher established minimum flows. It's the policy of Idaho that the minimum flows established under policy 32 are sufficient and necessary to meet the minimum requirements for aquatic life fishing to provide water for recreation and snake river below the dam. straight below depletion, below the minimum quantity is not the public interest. The below Milner Dam thing is critical, it must be zero CFS. If in a watershed year, in order to satisfy the rights in the upper state, well, could be set at zero, flow below that is one where the board gets one time to go down. That's where the 3,900 CFS impacts. You stop and think a minute, if for some reason Milner Dam were shut off and there were no water going by, where's the water in the river coming from? Obviously from the mountain springs here. That's the water that makes up the flow for the Berkey Gauge in low flow parts of the year. If we're going to guarantee 3,900 in Murphy Gauge, most of that obviously discharge has to get done through the Murphy Gauge, at least enough to make up 3,900 with whatever return flows might get in the board. The board feels comfortable here because of raising the amount of water that has to be in the river at any given time. The board also feels comfortable, they feel, speaking for myself, the board has another authority to guarantee water for these kind of uses, and that's their in-stream flow program. The board is the only entity in the state that can appropriate the unappropriated waters in the state and leave that water in the river. They've done that on many of the tributary streams in terms of protecting fish and wildlife in the whole basin. Tributary streams, in some cases, are as important as any other state. Policy 32E, water quality and pollution control. This is a very terse version of what's already in the water plan, and that simply is to provide that, to take good water and mix it with bad water so someone can meet a wastewater discharge requirement is not a beneficial use of water. There are existing laws on the books, both state and federal, which should serve to protect our water quality. If we're in such a terrible water short condition that we can't meet Idaho Falls water rights, we've got to enter into some kind of compromise with them. We shouldn't be taking good water and using it to make bad water more palatable. Policy 32I, new storage. This is a fairly complex. Hopefully it won't work out that way, but it seems complex at the moment. And this particular policy includes two different policies. The first one is probably easiest to explain in that it states that it is the policy of Idaho that maximum use must be made of the existing storage facilities in the basin. New storage upstream from the Murphy Gauge should only be approved after it is determined that insofar as possible, maximum use of existing storage is being made. Well, most of us in here know that a person can have a full natural flow right and a full stored water right for the same piece of ground, with the stored water being held as returned water. A person who's got a really old natural flow right never has to call for a stored water right, or very rarely, once in 10, once in 20. There are extreme examples. The city of Pocatello, for example, has a block of storage. They've never called for it. It's there for an extreme emergency. Pocatello would double in size and they had a drop in size. They might have to call for it. Physically, they can only get it if they put pumps in the river and tried to nail it when it went on downstream past them. There's water up there that doesn't get used. So the negotiators asked the board to include this as a policy in the water plan. They asked the board to proceed and make the necessary contacts to try and, one, change state law, federal rules and regulations, and state rules and regulations in terms of can we better use the water that's held in storage in the basin. Well, we all know that on October 1st, in any good year, the flow at Milner Dam goes taken way up as the water master tries to get some space for next year's runoff. I think this year it was about 12,000 CFS on October 1st. That's water that's set in storage up there all summer long, used by the recreational interests, but put to no other use, and then it's sent on down the river because we need to make space. Why don't we move that water around? If there are people who need water, if we're in such a water short area, why don't we move that water around? Well, the state has what's called the Water Bank Program. Rules and regulations are established so that water can be moved around. The Committee of Nine does market water in the upper parts of the river. Why isn't it particularly effective? Well, federal law says that if you store water behind the federal reservoir, you cannot sell that water at a profit. So there's no incentive for someone with a block of unused storage water to go out and try and sell it. Federal law also provides that if you have water stored behind the federal dam, you can only sell or lease that water 1 year at a time. If someone wants to go in and do something new, break out new ground, put in a new business, and he's only assured of water for a 1 year contract at a time, he probably is not going to put much of his own money into it, and certainly not many banks are going to want to finance him when his water supply is limited to a contract whose duration is 1 year. State law, even though we, the state, set up the water bank program, state law provides that you cannot expand the water use. You have a right to that water, and it's based on the beneficial use that you claimed it under. And if it's irrigation, it's for irrigation of so many acres of ground. If you have excess water and want to sell it, if that's tied to your ground, you'd have to cut down the acres you're irrigating. Otherwise, it would be an expansion of use if that new use were a consumptive use. You could sell that water out of power because they're a non-consumptive user, but you couldn't sell it to another farmer because that same block of water that's tied to this one piece of ground is going to be irrigating two pieces of ground. That's a federal state law. There's also the worry constantly in the back of anyone's mind who gets involved in the water bank. You use your water for where it's supposed to be once in 5 years or you lose it. So the water board has asked for the state to try and make the rules and regulations applying to the water bank simpler. They've asked the water board. The water board has been asked in some informal discussions with the Bureau of Reclamation, for example, can we change these state laws? We need not disincentives, but incentives for people who have excess water to make it available to other potential users. That's the first part of the policy. Let me say, as the director of the Department of Water Resources has said in similar meetings, if he were asked to make a determination today, are we making, under existing conditions, maximum use of the facilities in the system, today he has to say no. There's unallocated water in Ryerson. Once that water is gone, allocated out, then his decision would have to be, are we doing the best we can under the existing laws that we operate under? The answer there would be, probably yes. He may not agree that all the laws are the best laws in the world. Hopefully before the question arises, one, we get rid of the water that's unallocated in Ryrie and somebody comes with a reasonable new construction facility. These questions will have been asked of the state and the federal government, and we'll know whether we're going to be able to change it. Most people aren't too hopeful about changing many of the rules and regulations, but it was felt that if we're so critical we can't meet existing water rights on the system, why don't we use up some of the water we hold back every year and then let it out of it? Second part of this, very sensitive topic and much more appropriate in this area. Second part states that approval of new storage projects that would divert water from the main stem of the Snake River between Murphy, Milner and Murphy during the period November 1 to March 31st should be coupled with provisions that mitigate the impact such depletions would have on the generation of hydropower. You've got two competing interests sitting down trying to work on agreement and do trade-offs. This is one of the trade-offs. Idaho Power is concerned particularly about their wintertime operation. It used to be a big part of their scheme of things to sell water to the West Coast during the winter season to balance the irrigation load in Idaho in the summertime. What's getting to be with more and more urban development in Idaho, and it seems like colder winters lately, that they have a pretty good market in Idaho for electric power for heating purposes also. That's part of their operational scheme. The other key factor, of course, is that Brownlee Dam fails during this period. It's the only storage reservoir in the Hells Canyon complex, the only two are basically on the river dams. So they, as the trade-off, wanted to make sure that there was water coming down in the wintertime, they could generate power with where they needed it and store it if they didn't. Now it says mitigation. What does that mean? Very carefully explained in the text that mitigation means lessening the impact of. It doesn't mean compensation. You don't give them a dollar or a volume of water equal to what you're taking away necessarily. If you that you lessen the negative impact of. I said it's a sensitive topic because the three negotiators couldn't agree as to how this should be handled. And they sort of bumped it to the water board saying, we want the board, in conjunction with the department, to deal with this mitigation question. Well, if you start thinking about making up general rules covering it, it's pretty clear that each individual project is going to have a different kind of impact, a different time of impact, and the kinds of mitigation that may be necessary will be different for each one. It's been pointed out in public testimony, and probably we pointed out again that the very concluding language about no current proposals for storage in this region is incorrect. That's one of the advantages of going out for public hearing, and to ensure that that will be changed. The very last one, the third one, stormwater for management purposes. This is a whole new concept, and it's not even in the agreement. It's a reflection of what the agreement forces the Department of Water Resources to do. It says the department can issue new permits, but they can never let the river go below 3,900 or 5,600 CFS. That would be in two different seasons. Now, the department feels there's plenty of water available to do that. We have a historic low flow of 4,500 CFS. Our target is 39. Depending on how much consumptive use is made of the water that's diverted, depending where the diversions take place and the timing, conceivably there's a lot of water that can be moved around still while maintaining that flow. The thing that Ken Dunn was quoted in the paper as saying is that the possibility of him hitting exactly 3,900 CFS is nil. He has two choices. One, he can be very conservative in how he allocates this new water, or this water the state has to be allocated. Always keeping himself a good cushion. That's fair, and he never makes a mistake that way, perhaps. But it means there's water that could be used that won't be used because he doesn't want to get too close to the 3,900. If the state could acquire some water to be held in the state's name, that was to be released or available for call, if the department made a mistake, if they really screwed up, it was clearly our fault, we could call for that water and meet the requirement of 3,900 CFS of the emergency gauge. Two things happened here. One, the water plan, or the agreement specifies that any user in place by October 1st, 1984, anyone who can prove beneficial use, will not be subject to call by the state or Idaho Power to meet the 3,900 CFS requirement. That person is exempt. He's state protected, whatever word you want to use for it. So anybody who's a new user after the date of this agreement is the one who would be shut off to try and meet that flow. If we start issuing groundwater permits out on the aquifer, and it's well, there are lots of advantages trying to do that, because a person who pumps groundwater 50 miles from Thousand Springs, the impact of his pumping may not be felt for months or years after the fact. If we issue permits right out of the river, 2 days later, the impact of that diversion is shown at work. So we feel that technically we can probably allow more development on the Snake Plain Aquifer and see less impact in the river. The problem there, of course, is if there is a call, shutting off a junior man who's 50 miles from Diamond Springs isn't going to do the flow of river gauge a bit of good. Not for months. So for management flexibility, it would really be nice if the department makes a mistake to be able to call the water master on the phone and say, dump some of that water that belongs to the state so we can meet the flow. There's no intention that if the state were able to acquire water for this purpose, it would sit there. The whole point of much of the agreement is to better use the water in the system. It would go to the water bank, it could be sold by the power. It wouldn't sit there idle. But when we see we're getting down towards 3,900, we keep some of it so we can meet this requirement. The other reason that I think it would be nice to have this flow available is that if it's only the junior guy who's going to get called on, who's going to get shut off if the flow were to go below 3,900, and a lot of them are going to be groundwater users, most states where they get into that situation, Colorado is a good example, require the groundwater user to have surface water available to meet a call in the river. There's any likelihood that he's going to be asked to be shut off. Now, the unallocated water in Rotary may not last very long. And even if it were, an individual groundwater user, it's pretty cumbersome for him to go to the Bureau of Reclamation and find a small volume of water. Whereas if the state held that water, they could lease it, sell it to the groundwater user as the insurance water he might need if they were called to it. I want to reemphasize that, distinct from the policy, the agreement, of course, discusses a lot of other things that have to be done to get the whole thing in place. The agreement very clearly specifies, however, October 1st, 1984, if you're in place, you're protected. You're protected in extreme drought condition. The flow were to go below 3,900 because of drought or mismanagement on the department's part, the user who was in place before October 1st would still be entitled to his water, no matter how low the flow got. I think, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. We'll now start the public testimony section of our meeting. And when we call your name to testify, if you'd please come up the podium, state your name, your address, and your telephone number for the record, we'd much appreciate it. We'd first like to call Robert Reichert, Chairman of the Committee of Nine, and member of the Board of Directors, Twin Falls Canal Company.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. As you have stated, my name is Robert Reichert. I reside on a farm near Filer, Idaho. I'm the chairman of the Committee of Nine and also a member of the Twin Falls Canal Company. At the present time, I am secretary treasurer of that board. I appear here at the request of the Twin Falls Canal Company Board of Directors. As you know, the Twin Falls Canal Company delivers irrigation water to an excess of 200,000 acres. We have followed the Swan Falls controversy and its suggested solution closely. In our opinion, the only major impact on the existing rights of the company and its landowners is that we must now participate in adjudication. Today, the president of our company is appearing at a legislative hearing in Boise in support of the Snake River Basin adjudication. As to the proposed changes to the state water plan that this board is asked to endorse, we have reviewed the same and encourage you to implement those provisions. While a compromise is sometimes that hurts everybody a little, it is a reasonable compromise that's being considered. We encourage your support of it and further encourage the changes in the state water plan to facilitate that accord. I thank you for the opportunity to appear here. I request that a copy of this statement be made to part of the official hearing record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Reichert. Might you stand for a question the board members may have? Mr. Reidolch?
I have questions.
Mr. Schauber?
I have.
Mr. Kramer?
Just like to thank you, Bob, for coming and giving your testimony, and thank the Canal Company board members for doing so.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
The board will now call Dell Hyatt.
My name is Dell Hyatt. My address is 1746 Dora Drive North, Twin Falls. My telephone number is 733-6925. I've studied this plan for a few days. I haven't had it very long, this agreement. I've personally familiar with your responsibilities and with the water organization. But as I go over this plan, it seems to me we're sold out to Idaho Power. It seems to me that the water user is the one on the short end, and you're giving Idaho Power everything that they've asked for. And so on that, those points, I could go over these one by one, but you even go here to giving them the right to buy, sell, lease, and prior rights to do all of these things. And after 45 days, why, this filing is out. And I understand there's 2,000 files that haven't been recorded. And so there's a lot of water out there that somebody's going to pick up. So I'm concerned about this point. I'm concerned about others in this agreement between Idaho Power and the operation. And so therefore, I object to the way that it's drawn up. That's my feeling. I appreciate all you've done, but this is my feeling at the present time.
Thank you, Mr. Hyatt. We'll see if any board members have a question of you, if you might stay there for a minute. Mr. Rydalch?
I have no question.
I have no
question.
Mr. Kramer?
No question.
The board will now call Art Martin.
As I furnished, thank you, Mr. Gray, and ladies and gentlemen, due to some conversation yesterday at the Burley Inn, in this same type of a meeting, the word was kicked around quite a little bit, the word mitigation. And since we first heard of it, and any part of its meaning, we've been quite concerned over it, and we've worked with the worked with the negotiators continually with Jones's office, the governor's office, water people, trying to let ourselves be known. And with the Exhibit A and B that each one of you have, I'll try quickly here to kind of tie that together. We have been involved, we have been informed that the negotiating team for the Swan Falls Agreement considered the Little Pilgrim Project as an old project. Not a new project to go in tomorrow, but considered as already, you might say, being intact. Due to being active in both the BLM and that will turn over the ground if they can see a little water, and Water Resources Department over the last 10 years, B, we, pointing to exhibit, that's Exhibit A, and pointing to the feasibility study, so to speak, we also have been involved in over $500,000 in investment in the Little Pilgrim Project, surveying, engineering, core drilling, feasibility studies, etc., over the 10-11 year period. Now then, this is directed, I guess, the next one, C, to Exhibit B. Referring to the letter from Jim Jones affirming his feelings on mitigation for the Little Pilgrim Project, I am informed the Water Board has total responsibility of the decision making on the mitigation bid, part of the Swan Falls Agreement.